Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, that's awesome. My name is Jessica Young, and I am finishing up my PhD at Johns Hopkins University, and I will be presenting on a very sexy topic involving funding formulas from state to local health agencies. No relationships to disclose, unfortunately. And I'd like to take some time to first acknowledge some organizations and people who helped us out on this project. So first I want to give a shout out to ASTO, and also to two key people from Hopkins, JP, and Beth Resnick. And I'd also like to thank Temple University and the Public Health Law Research Group and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for funding this research. So the objectives for my talk today, first I want to provide a quick project overview and then talk a little bit about local health department funding. Then I'll get to talk about state funding formulas and also the policy and research implications of this project. So the project that I'm presenting on today is a supplement to the broader setting budgets and priorities project that gently encouraged me to join a few years ago. And that project really was looking at how state health agencies set their budgets and priorities. But this particular aspect is a supplemental to that project. And here we focus on state statutory and regulatory funding formulas that distribute non-categorical or core funds from the state to local health agencies. But first, I want to talk a little bit about local health departments. So we all know that local health departments, or LHDs, are critical components of the public health system. There are about 2,800 LHDs throughout the nation, and they range in the numbers of populations served. Some LHDs serve fewer than 1,000 residents, while others, like New York City, serve over 8 million residents. Despite the differences in populations served, there are some general funding considerations that all LHDs have. LHDs depend heavily on federal funds to fund their public health activities, but state general funds may become increasingly important. Currently, about a quarter of funds that LHDs use come directly from the state, but fiscal uncertainty, as we recently experienced with the shutdown and other shenanigans at the federal level, may put current funding streams from the federal level in danger. So thinking about the importance of state general funds to LHDs given the fiscal environment, there are several ways that these funds are distributed from the state to local health departments. So we know that there are federal grants, and there's sometimes a combination of per capita and other categorical grants, contracts, fees and fines, taxes, a variety of methods to distribute funds from the state to locals. Today I want to focus on the use of funding formulas in statute or in regulation that are used to distribute funds from state to locals. So what are some reasons why funding formulas are used to allocate funds? So funding formula is a common budgeting tool. It's commonly used in education. If you look at the funding formula literature, you will mostly see work done examining funding formulas for public education systems. But there are some advantages and challenges to note about the use of funding formulas to allocate funds. So there are arguments that funding formulas provide political insulation to the budgeting practice. And this is done by creating a perception of objectivity and transparency in the methods used to allocate funds. And it's also perceived as an equitable way to allocate public funds. But there are some challenges, such as what defines equity and what metrics are actually used, which I will discuss in a little bit, of what's actually used to construct the funding formulas, and also the data needs and data availability to drive funding formulas. So the purpose of this study is to add to the public health finance literature by actually looking at statutory and regulatory essentially funding formulas at the state level. Really want to illustrate and categorize these funding formulas and what's used to construct them, and also the factors that are used to determine those formulas. So in the broader setting budgets and priorities project I mentioned in the beginning, conducted 45 key informant in-depth interviews to really understand the budget priority process. And as a part of those interviews, 7 sources mentioned the use of funding formulas in setting their budgets. So when we were asked to provide a supplemental project focusing on public health law to this SVP project, we figured that we would look closer at the funding formulas that were in statute, since our interview participant did mention the use of funding formulas, so we decided to take that route. We started off looking at data from a survey that was conducted in collaboration between ASTO and some researchers from several universities that looked at the use of funding formulas in general in state health agencies. And as a part of that survey, states identified whether or not the funding formulas were in law or in statute. So 39 states completed the survey, and from there we identified the states that indicated that the funding formulas were in law. And to supplement this survey, we conducted a 50-state search using Westlaw, which is an online searching legal database, to see if there were any other states out there, particularly those who did not finish the survey, who did have funding formulas in law or in statute. So this search was systematic and structured, and it was based on keywords related to funding formulas and budgeting practices. So here are the results. We found 10 states that had statutory or regulatory formulas for non-categorical or core funds, and the states that were identified are in orange. These states were Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Maryland, Minnesota, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, Utah, and West Virginia. And Oregon's formula was specific to tribal governing councils, which is these councils can act as LFT. We included them in the result. So here's the fun stuff for me, actually looking at what the formulas were made from. So here's some metrics used. So some of the metrics were based strictly on populations, such as per capita, very simple, or population density within the county. There are also some metrics used that were based on need, such as the programs or interventions that the LHDs were currently conducting in their locality, and also community health needs, such as health status and chronic or infectious diseases. There were a few historical metrics used. Most common was the percentage of previous allocations. And there's also a base plus metric that was used. So that means that all localities receive a certain amount of base funding, and the plus part is determined by some other factor, maybe per capita or need. Another interesting part of funding formulas is who actually participates in the construction of the formula. So for all of the statutes and regulations that we found, the chief executive, such as the Secretary of Health or the Commissioner of Health, had the final say in formula design. But there was variation in who actually has to be consulted when designing this formula. So here's an example. In Illinois, the director has the final determination in who and what the formula looks like, but they also have to consult folks at the Illinois Association of Public Health Administrators or the Northern Illinois Public Health Consortium. So not all states did this, but it was interesting to see who actually was involved besides the health commissioner in designing the formulas. Some other variations were seen in specificity. There were some statutes and regulations that were very broad, generally granting the health department, state health department, to design the formula, so a granting of powers. In other states, it went beyond just simply granting the power or ability to design a formula. So we'll see an example of that. And all statutes mention which metrics should be used or considered when designing the formula. So here's Maryland, where I'm from. This is an example of the granting of general authority to design formulas, and also a consideration of what kind of metrics to use. So the statute mentions who the Secretary of Health should consult, and also mentions some consideration of community health needs and local funding efforts, but also provides discretion into other factors that can be considered when designing funding formulas. New Jersey was very specific, even going as far as providing the actual formula that should be used. So beyond just granting the authority to design a funding formula, the state legislature decided to tell them exactly how to use the formula. And here are the definitions of what actually constructs this formula. So per capita, a consideration of the special needs population, and a consideration of relative fair share of a locality. That would be defined in comparison to the other statutes. So I have a broad interest in health equity, and thinking about what actually is considered to be equitable when designing funding formulas was interesting to me. Looking at the metrics that the state legislature decided to use or to prompt local or state health departments to consider when designing these funding formulas can give an idea of what is equitable in the mind of legislature. So, looking at statutes that strictly fund based on per capita, I mean, that tells us that, okay, the state legislature thinks that counting population and providing a specific sum per person is equitable, and we don't have to go any further. But looking at statutes that say, you know, consider per capita, but also consider these other needs, that provides some variation in what's equitable across the states using these formulas. And, you know, there's no true optimal mix of metrics. All states are different, all localities are different, have different needs. So I wouldn't go as far to argue that there is one approach to designing funding formulas that is optimal. And truly, the metrics are not value-free. They represent some idea behind them. So one other thing that was interesting in looking at these funding formulas, that three states decided to address partnerships and regionalization in the actual design of the funding formula. And I'll go into a little bit of why that's important. But here's an example, Indiana. This was really long, so I had to paraphrase a bit to fit it on the slide. So Indiana gives authority to grant state money to those local health departments that decide to pull their resources and create partnerships and funding, as long as it meets certain criteria, such as benefiting the greatest number of people and being cost effective, among other things. So this leads into future funding formulas needs. I'll start at the bottom since I just talked about regionalization. Because local health departments are facing very restrictive economic times, there is an increase in the need and the desire to actually pull resources together and regionalize or create partnerships. So in the future, funding formulas will definitely need to consider how to fund these partnerships. We also have to consider the impact of the Affordable Care Act on funding, especially if the federal funds change under the Act, and state general funds become more important, and that ties into federal fiscal uncertainty as well. And also to consider the impact of population and demographic changes, especially because the United States is going to become a majority-minority country by 2050. So we really need to consider how the changes in our populations will impact our funding needs. I wanted to provide an example of the future funding needs from Maryland. So early 2013, there was a survey of local health departments in Maryland, and one of the biggest findings was that the local jurisdiction's reliance on state general funds were likely to increase, especially under the ACA, the Federal Healthcare Reform. And because of this is probably not special to Maryland, it's probably true across the nation, but because of this, you know, it's important to make sure that state funds, because they're becoming increasingly important, are distributed not only adequately, but also equitably as we move forward. There are a few policy implications that I want to talk about, including defining what's equitable and creating methods to allocate public funds, and making sure that we have participation and collaboration, especially with people who are going to be impacted by those funds. And we should also understand the values and priorities of the metrics that are used in funding formulas and making those metrics in the selection of those methods transparent. And perhaps most importantly, we have to make sure that the data is available and that the data are good, that we can rely on reliable data to drive formulas. And so future research, so some more fun for me, perhaps, following this is a comparison of funding formula design between the non-categorical and categorical public health activities, including our different metrics used, and are there differences in who's actually involved in designing the funding formulas. And another possible research path would be connecting funding formula design to different outcomes, including and then administration or practice outcomes, and also the health outcomes of the population impacted. That's that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you to our panelists, and now we have ample time for questions, so feel free to ask each of the panelists what you'd like. So,
I have a question for Jeff. It's a very interesting presentation, and I'm interested in the idea about equity and participation, and I'm wondering if any of the statutes that you reviewed required them to consult or cooperate with non-governmental entities like tribal organizations or community-based advocacy groups in the definition of those formulas, and if you think that is a promising route to enhancing equity.
So there weren't any specific non-governmental groups besides the groups that were the ones in the Illinois statute, but I think that is needed. I think in general that there needs to be more community participation, especially when we want to make equitable decisions. So I think it's a promising path to take.
Additional questions for Jessica. I guess you only have 10 states,
yeah.
So New Jersey is a homeless state, so I don't know if sort of state standards are going to influence how specific they are,
right.
How broad. Also, you categorize it as non-categorical funding, but in some of those examples, it's really clear that the state has a particular focus or purpose in that. So, to me, non-categorical funding is like, here's money, go pay your bills, versus, like, you know what, there's going to be some kind of unmet need that we want to make sure you address, or something else. For future research, I would consider looking at different allocations based on what you would go forward with in defining as equitable versus what being used. See if the final allocation really ends up that different. Because you talked about the transparency and the availability of data, and if unfortunately per capita isn't it's not necessarily a great measure of need, but it's available and people know it and people trust it and can kind of wrap their heads around it. So I think that's another thing to consider in going forward. When you look at the more categorical funding, it also suggests looking at if there's a federal source, what the formula requirements are for that particular federal source, so that maybe it's just a date saying, okay, we're just going to follow, we're going to follow through on the federal allocation.
And what's your name? Any other questions? Yeah.
For JP, the IOM definition of minimum package, I know there's lots of conversations now, the resources, because becomes scarce about what exactly health departments should be doing. So you reference that. Do you have that definition?
In the Iowa report, they lay out the idea that a minimum package of public health services needs to exist, and that that package should include foundational programs that all health departments should have, as a for instance, so environmental health, maternal child health, and cross-cutting capabilities that support all of the foundational programs. But the IOM report is also pretty clear that they don't, in that report, they don't have the full list of what those ought to be. Right now, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has funded some national leaders to constitute this list of both the foundational programs and the cross-cutting capabilities. And DeBeaumont's also supporting some work in that space, so I'd be happy to talk to you afterwards if you'd like more information.
Okay, great. And then increases in funding. I know a lot of us in public health or with government entities, we've seen lots of increases due to pension costs and things of that nature. So we've seen increases in funding, but it's not correlated to increases in services. So when you were doing your research, did you find that? Did you see that pension costs and things of that nature were really skewing things to make it look like more money was being spent on public health, but in reality it's not?
It's an excellent question. One of the things that I didn't talk about during this presentation, but you're able to look at this data, are look at associated costs associated with increases in salaries, increases in pension, and other kinds of benefit requirements. The census does track those differently. So so I can't say confidently that every state would have that taken into account, because I haven't looked through every single record. But as a rule, the census said that you're supposed to count those, you're supposed to pull those out when calculating current operations, because pension expenditures, and really pension obligations for the future, are just so much greater than what people currently budget for, that it would be hard to kind of represent what people are actually spending.
For instance, in Kentucky, our statewide, our health department obligations for pension this year is approximately $30 million. That's going to rise to $48 million next year. So it's quite substantial for us, and we're getting cuts.
Yeah.
Okay, and then for Jessica, correlations between the funding formulas and health outcomes, did you see any of that, or did your research kind of look at any of that, or is that something else to be done there?
That's something else to be done in the future.
Thank you.
Yeah, for Jessica.
Actually, almost a corollary. So when I looked at that, I was struck how my home state, Georgia, was showing it the great increase. And I'm really pretty aware of some dramatic structural changes that took place in state public health in that 2002 to 2011 period.
Right.
You know, starting as a sub-agency of the Department of Human Resources, becoming a sub-agency of community health with the Medicaid program, and those periods of standing as an independent agency.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's one state, and you've got 50, and it's hard to tease out all of the different changes that might have taken place. But do you have anything epidemiologically to tease out the impact of structural changes?
Yeah, actually, so just within the last 2 weeks, a separate group has published a paper on looking at structural changes in health departments over the past, I guess, decade or so. And it highlights some of the examples that you just gave. So I haven't been able to incorporate that into the presentation, but I will say two things. So when I presented the designated state health agencies, that was a snapshot for that reason, because there's, you know, year-to-year restructuring and what a designated state health agency looks like, what departments or divisions are within it, what's not in it. So behavioral health might move in and out of a department, Medicaid and public health might merge and merge. So the 2011, that first mapping stop, probably should be okay. For the one where it's merged, FY07 through 11, what I would say to you is, because what the census does is look at spending across all governmental agencies on quote-unquote public health, excluding Medicaid and other personal health care, that actually shouldn't ostensibly be affected by reorgs like that, because in one sense you're going to be capturing, you know, five agencies spending X amount on public health, and then the next year you're going to be capturing three agencies spending X plus some change, but it's the same idea, right? So it's a really fair concern. And when should people want to look at the census data, and you want to look at state health agency versus system level, I would say, if you look over time, you have to take into account the structural changes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
Jessica. This is what I got last year. I can't take it away from me. How are you going to, I mean, one of the biggest problems with funding formulas is you've got to fund, at least half the people aren't going to like what you're doing. How are you going to address that?
Let's get more money for everybody.
Right.
Leave it there.
That's a good question.
But the reason I ask is this whole line of research is predicated on some ability to change funding formula. But I've seen tenacious fights about funding formulas. Just because I'm a state senator and you're taking money away from my district, even though my district is rich and doesn't really need public help, you're taking my stuff.
I
don't
intend
to take them, really. You did. It's a zero-sum game. Most budgeting is a zero-sum game.
Right.
Realistically. So if it's a zero-sum game, any change in a budget in a funding formula is taking money from one person and giving it to another. Mm-hmm. How do you get around?
Well, for me, it would be more of the argument of equity, of what's fair. Yeah, that's really something I haven't thought too much about, to be honest.
Well, since, I mean, and the reason I say that is since you're talking to people, maybe the important question is, how do we change it? Not how do we change it to the better, mm-hmm. How do we physically change it? Because I've looked at funding formulas before, and you know, the thing is, we can all figure out a way to give out the money and fund better. But the political realities are state politics that tends to be, and worse than that, they are arguing about public health money, which is such a small pool in the first place.
Right.
But I've seen them just first sport fighting over this. So maybe the first focus is how do you change that argument? I mean, I can understand equity. Can you make them vote? Can you make them say the argument should be about totally about equity? How do you make that happen?
For me, I would run for the state legislature.
You would what?
I would run for the state legislature.
One person is going to change the party. Yeah,
it starts with one person, right? And then you build political coalition and partner with powerful people and try to convince them. That's how I think about it.
Not sure.
Yeah.
So I might take a slightly different perspective than Jeff. So the idea, I think, of funding formulas, the reason they're so interesting, and I suspect the reason you find that really interesting, is that if you look at how it's done otherwise, at the state level, going state to local, in many of these states that don't have designated funding formulas, if they provide any core support at all to locals, it's at the discretion of the leadership at the given time. And that leadership is a political appointee, and that leadership might change it depending on who appoints them. So the reason that funding formula in statute or in regs are so interesting is that if you can get over that initial hump, right, you can convince a couple legislators that this is the way to do it, then I think you have a lot better chance of addressing equity in that way and not being so... suck in political mire. Even though public health is inherently political, I mean public health budgeting even more so, I think one of them wants a little easier.
I totally agree. Like, if you can get the funder, yeah, the formula implemented, the yeah, challenge is
how.
Right. And if you get a formula implemented, you've got to make it a formula that can change with time.
Sure.
Like you said, you know, that needs change.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I think maybe the other side of this too is that if funding for local health departments is going to be reduced, that if you can tie a funding allocation to health outcomes, then maybe there's a little bit more leverage in getting people to realize, okay, we've got to put our money where we're going to get the most return.
And the first step in that kind of research is just doing the work to characterize how funding formulas happen, which I think is where Jeff is right now.
And Patrick, too, we should say. So he was on the team that did the 2009 study.
Well, let's give our panelists a round of applause.